It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along on this Saturday. Captain Mike?
Yeah, man, I got my jacket on. It's a little chilly today. Yeah,
right,
you know,
right.
Oh man, I see you growing a beard. You getting used to the cold weather.
Right,
the,
oh yes, you know,
the coming. Yeah.
I'm doing that. I'm doing that to keep you warm in 40 some odd days in the mountains of Colorado.
Yeah.
This is a precursor to what happens in November.
I think that's just a reason not to shave.
Well, there's that.
I think you just turned lazy on me.
Well, that's right. That's probably the word people like to use with me. So yeah, I've gone all lazy on it. Lots to do on today's show. We'll talk about today is National Public Land Day, and we'll talk about it right here at home in the Yellowhammer State. Public lands that you can get out and enjoy and hunt, and where we stack up against other states and what opportunities are out there. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. And public waters, that's where we find this man, Captain Wayne Miller. And he
every
is,
day.
Yes, he is, and making great use of them, catching lots of bass. Hey, Captain.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Doing great. Let's talk about this. We're it feels like August here in September. It has been hot.
Yeah, man. You know, I would love to tell you that, we're in the some great fishing with the early fall bite, but that's not the case. What we've had over the past week, there's a lot of fish being caught, but obviously the water temperatures have not come down, and that's pretty easy for anybody to surmise because we've just had some just unbelievable temperatures, up in the day. I mean, the heat index has just been incredible. So, what we've seen is the water temperature stayed up and it continues just to be a summer bite. I mean, I hate to complain about catching fish because you can go out and especially with soft plastic, even up in the heat of the day, we've had pretty decent tides. So, with the water moving, you're able to take, the soft plastic, creature baits or, just little small, 6-7 inch, worms and catch plenty of fish. But it's just still a grind.
Well, that's this time of the year. What about DOAs? I mean, I know there's shrimp up in the bays and up in the creeks and stuff right now in the rivers.
Yeah, every now and then I'm seeing some, come up and chase some shrimp on top, and I've been able to catch a few on the DOAs, but that bite just really has not taken off yet. And then, everything I'm hearing is that, the north end of the bay is really loading up with the shrimp now.
Right.
So, I think as we move toward the end of September, if we can just get a little bit of cool weather and really trigger some more movement on the shrimp to migrate further up in the lower end of the delta, I think things will take off. I mean, it'll be where we expect it to be around the 1st of October.
Now, I know right before we went on the show, you was telling me because you're using plastics that the flounder bite was good. Tell me about the flounder.
Man, Mike, it's really incredible, and me not being a guy that typically targets, specks or flounder or any of those particular fish, it's just kind of, I catch a lot of them by accident.
Right.
But that's one of the great things about fishing, the delta, especially in the fall, it's typically a mixed bag. But over the last 2-3 years, we had seen a pretty significant decline
big time.
The numbers that people were catching. And I'm primarily talking about people that go out and target, guys that really know what they're doing, not me. And, I used to catch a lot of them just, using soft plastic. Well, over the last month, man, I have seen just a tremendous increase in the number of flounder that we're catching now on soft plastic. And that's, it's reminiscent of what we were doing 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. So for whatever reason, it looks to me like that flounder bite's coming back. So that's fantastic.
That is. You know, and I know some people that strictly target flounder. That's what they do. And it has been a terrible year for them. I mean, a terrible year. You know, fishing around Dolphin Island, fishing around the Industrial Canal.
Although, I mean, we saw more coming in the rodeo this year than we had in the past. I mean, I remember Sean Powers was talking about some improvement there.
Yeah. But it's just not like it used to be. You know, I got friends that would go out and catch 50 or 100 a day.
Yeah, well, that may be why they the numbers came down.
But I'm just saying that's the way it used to be. It's not like that anymore.
Yeah,
They go out and catch
morning,
two or three.
This morning, I've already caught three, and I mean a couple of them really nice ones. I mean, probably 4 pounds or better.
Man,
and I tell you what, I caught
strong
last year on a trip with Captain Wayne. I caught a really nice flounder as well. We were bass fishing. I caught that flounder. That was a stud.
Yeah.
That was, you could have filleted the fillets off it. You didn't just have to scale it. I mean, it was a stuffing flounder.
How about that?
Yeah, so big one.
Yeah.
You just have to bass fish. That's what you have to do, flounder fishermen. You just have to start bass fishing.
You know, it's really crazy because a lot of people don't believe me unless they go out with me and they see it firsthand. But, man, one of the best bass baits on the Delta year-round is a watermelon chartreuse tail lizard. I mean, it just catches fish year-round on this Delta. And I throw it quite a bit this time of year. And, man, that's what I catch a tremendous number of both redfish and flounder on. I mean, that's just, if you want to get bit, I really can't think of a bait that's better with the conditions we've got right now than that, regular Zoom watermelon chartreuse tail lizard.
What size is that? Is that lizard?
It's a 6-inch.
Six inch.
If you were going to target flounder in the where you're fishing in the bay, not in the bay, but in the lower delta, how would you target the flounder? I mean, is there places where they are? They right on the edge of a drop off in the rivers, or are they in the mouth of the creeks? Or
most of the places that I'm catching them are places where you've got a shell that drops off, and typically, like this morning, I mean, all three of them that I caught were in identical spots. It's places with wood right on the bank. And then you've got a shelf that comes out, anywhere from 5 to 10 feet, and it's about 3 to 4 feet, and then it drops to 8, 9 feet of water. And they seem to, every one of them I've caught, have been right on that break on the shelf. And, what I'm doing is, most of the time I'm catching the bass, tight, especially where you've got that wood.
Right.
But I always work that, plastic out to that drop, because a lot of times, especially once the tide starts really moving good and the water comes down some, those fish, some of them will pull out to that drop off. So, what I'm looking for is the bass. But, I'm catching those flounders out right on the edge of that flat where it drops off.
You're in the river?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the main rivers.
Probably the Mobile River. I know you fish that a lot. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
That's where I've been this morning. And that, like I say, some really beautiful flounder. But, I know over the last 3-4 years, it just got to the point where it was very uncommon for me to even catch a small flounder. And now we're getting back to the way it used to be. It's uncommon if I go out over the course of a morning and don't catch, two or three.
Man, that's great. I mean, if somebody went targeting flounders and, found those shelves that you're talking about and actually target them, I mean, you could probably have a pretty good day.
Yeah, you really could.
That is a good report. And you mentioned redfish, too. They still in pretty good numbers?
Yeah, man, the redfish population here on the Delta is just absolutely insane. I mean, I know it's not just me. I talk to tons of people, they're catching redfish all over. And, you know, I've had this discussion with Bobby several times. I've about come to the conclusion that a lot of these redfish that are up in some of these creeks down toward the lower end are just resident fish. I'm not sure they ever leave.
Yeah, can you catch them in the spring, catch them in the summer, and for sure the fall, and I imagine the winter as well. All right, let's do this because we want to get people out there this fall, whether they're going to find flounder in amongst the bass or they're just targeting bass with you. How do they get in touch to book a trip?
Well, they can reach me at 251-455-7404.
All right, great stuff. Captain Wayne, thanks. Get back at it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Wayne.
Okay, guys. Have a great one.
All right, Captain Wayne Miller checking in as we're rolling on with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Coming back, we're talking public land, National Public Lands Day. And we nationally, like, you can get in the national park today with no fees, and they're asking people to volunteer to do some cleanup and improvement efforts on national lands. But also, let's talk about the state. Our state of Alabama and public lands here. There are some really innovative things that they're doing with Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries to provide more hunting opportunities, but we still lag behind when it comes to public land compared to neighboring states right here in the Southeast. We'll talk more about this when we come back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along on this Saturday. Also, I said it's National Public Lands Day.
Yeah.
You know, on the federal level, I know there are certain, well, I think all the national parks are no fee to get in today. Although I made the joke earlier in the week, I said, don't go to the Smokies because it's always free to get in Great Smoky Mountains National Park, but take advantage of it this day. Actually, I think they're doing vouchers, too, with some of the national parks that if you get the voucher, you could go that day and do a volunteer effort and then get a voucher to come back a day in the future. So
that's a good deal.
Yeah, so that's on the national level, but I started thinking about it right here at home at a state level with our public lands and specifically for us, guys like us, lands that we can hunt.
You've been to a lot of parks in Alabama. I haven't been to, I mean, very few.
Yeah, I put that list up earlier in the week. Listeners were asking me about favorite state parks, and I put a list up there. And that's for, like, when we're camping or just doing family things. But then the other thing that's been so important to me, public lands for hunting.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get this idea that because we're pretty blessed here with the Mobile Tensaw Delta, you know, the W.O. Holland and the Tensaw Delta WMA and the Upper Delta WMA, Perdita River and a couple others that everywhere in the state is like it is here.
But we've lost quite a bit, too.
We have lost quite a bit. But there's some big ones down here in our neck of the woods. But you don't have to travel far till they become fewer and farther between.
Yes.
I'm going to talk more about that and talk about what's positive, too, because we've seen some big changes here lately with the special opportunity areas and different things that are going on in our state to help Alabamians have places to go hunt. And Chris Smith, Assistant Chief with the Wildlife Division with Alabama Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, joins us now. Hey, Chris.
Hey, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about public land opportunities in Alabama.
Let's start off on what's new. We've been talking about this for a couple years now, a year and a half. Because I'm excited. Special opportunity areas, SOAs as y'all call them. What is that?
Well, those are properties that have been purchased in the last couple of years in a partnership between the wildlife section and our grant funding and the Forever Wild Land Trust. And it kind of was triggered by some of the loss of the WMAs you were just talking about and trying to replace some of those public lands. Forever Wild Land Trust Board and the leadership of our department got together and put together a plan to try to purchase some properties in some of the underserved areas. And it's hard to purchase a tract of land like 20,000 or 30,000 acres like some of these WMAs we lost. So we ended up getting opportunities to purchase smaller tracts like 6,500 acres or 4,700 acres. And those are a little bit difficult just to open up back into the traditional wildlife management area plan. So we talked about doing the special opportunity area, and that's what kind of led to that. We're now in our second year of those properties being available through a limited quota permit draw system to have the opportunity to hunt.
Yeah, and you know what's great about them, I want to talk about how they make up for losses, but they also, you know, acre for acre, the way the nature of the properties y'all purchase, the way y'all are managing them, managing pressure and the wildlife, people are going to get a, and I'm a guy that's hunted a lot of public land in our state, so I'm not doing this just off the hip, but you're going to get a better hunting experience on that SOA is what it seems like to be, a better chance at a quality hunting experience.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. All the SOAs are divided up into units that average probably around 300 acres. And when you get a permit to hunt that area for that four-day hunt, you and a guest have that 300 or 350 acres to yourself to hunt for. The hunts begin on Thursday at noon and end on Sunday at noon. In most cases, there is a couple exceptions to that during, like, the primitive weapons hunt the week before regular gun season opens. But all of them are four-day hunts, and you're exactly right. I think it really offers an opportunity for a great hunting experience. I worked several of the hunts at Uchi Creek SOA last year, and it was it's kind of rewarding interacting with the folks that got a permit and talking with them during their hunt, after their hunt, sharing texts and emails, and all of the comments and feedback that I got are exactly what you just said.
Don't you have a place to stay, too?
We do not.
You don't have a place to stay? Okay, I couldn't remember whether you did or not.
No, you know what I was thinking about here on this, Mike, that Mike and I have talked about this a couple times since these SOAs have come up, that when you just mentioned it, you get a 300-acre block, 350-acre block. I don't know, you know, been a lot of hunting camps in my life. This would be the rare hunting camp that if you broke out the number of members versus the acreage, that each hunter would have 350 acres, you know, for them and their guests. I mean, this doesn't happen. I mean, most ratios on a hunting camp, 100 acres, something like that per member.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I've experienced as well.
So, I mean, yeah, they're getting a great opportunity. So you're making up with these SOAs, but we did. Mike mentioned it. We lost some pretty big tracks down here. I'm thinking, you know, Boykin was one of the big ones here. WMA. Those were some big tracks that were you know, a lot of people hunted those.
Yes, we lost those, and we also lost the majority of Coosa WMA for the same reason. You know, Coosa WMA, that one has about 10,000 acres of Forever Wild Land Trust property, but then the rest of it, when it used to be around 30,000 acres in size, was land that we leased through a cooperative agreement with a private owner, and we provided, you know, some maintenance and boundary maintenance, road maintenance, and other things for the opportunity to provide that land for public hunting. And as times have changed, some of those private landowners have, you know, decided to go a different direction with some of the lands that have historically been available to the public to hunt.
And thinking about this, acre for acre, I guess it's not a match, right? I mean, the acres through the SOA, I mean, I'm going to argue on your side that the quality is increased, but acre for acre, it's not a match.
No, sir, it's not. It's I cannot remember the exact acreage figure off the top of my head, but, you know, we've probably lost, you know, those three we just talked about, but there's been others. You know, there's other WMAs that we still have, but there's been portions of those pulled out. And if you were to total up all of that, we've probably lost around 200,000 acres in the past 4 or 5 years.
That's a lot of public land.
We're placing it acre for acre, but you know, we're certainly, and we're, you know, we're always looking for other opportunities to use some of our Pittman Robinson money to purchase more land and, you know, provide more opportunity.
I know this happened, you know, pretty recently. Was there a special reason why they changed and went another route besides providing hunting for the public? Was there any reason?
Or? I think the dynamics of some of these properties have changed, I guess, ownership within families, and like, say, in Coosa WMA, for example, the real estate investment trust that owned that sold that to a different one, and that new one had a different approach and had shareholders to answer to, you know, And so that's pretty much the reason for that.
You mentioned something I think is important for people to understand. We've talked about this on the show before, Pittman-Roberts Act, and you have, of course, you have the same thing goes on in the fishing world. But this is the money, y'all. This is the built-in excise tax that we pay when we buy what basically things that shoot, right, Chris? Guns, ammo, bows, arrows, those kind of things, right?
That is correct. That is correct. There's an excise tax that the industry put upon itself. That money goes into a pot, if you will, that is administered by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. There's an apportionment that goes out to every state based on their license sales and their land mass. And then that money is available for us to match with state funds. And the source of our state funds is license sales. And so, each year we get a notice or a letter from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife saying, hey, this year, Alabama, you have X number of dollars available. And then, every year we annually operate off of grants that we submit to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And those license dollars directly support us having the ability to get to those federal funds.
Yeah, this is what is so key. I'm going to get you to double back on this because I've been getting people to understand this. Buying a license, so very important. Even if you're not sure you're going to hunt this year or whatever, buy that license because not only does that give you the cash flow to match the federal money, but if we could buy lots of guns and ammo and bows and arrows in the state, have that excise money collected, but if we don't have the license sales to make the case, then that money doesn't come back home, does it? It could go elsewhere.
You're exactly right. If we don't have the state funds available to match those federal dollars, we can't get them. And it's a 25-75% match ratio. And so you're exactly right. There's a lot of folks out there that I've met over the years during different presentations that aren't even hunters, but I try to impress upon them, if you like to get out and hike or you like to bird watch or you do something, if you buy a hunting license, you're helping Alabama's Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, and there's a lot of non-game related activities that our section does. A lot of non-game research and all of that activity is supported by those license sales.
Has there ever been a year that you weren't able to match the funds?
So far, we have not had that happen, and I would say that. The last several years, our apportionment has been very high, and that led to that discussion that I mentioned right off the bat about the partnership between the Forever Wildland Trust and the Department of Conservation going out and trying to purchase lands, because if we didn't have that partnership going, we might have run into the issue of not being able to match, because the Forever Wildland Trust money, that goes to buy land. That doesn't go to do anything else but buy land.
Right.
So, the license sales, those dollars are what we match to buy equipment and pay salaries and do all the different things that happen on wildlife management areas, the research that's going on. And also those license dollars support the law enforcement section of the Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries Division. And one key thing is that federal money that we're talking about cannot be spent on any law enforcement activity at all.
Yeah, and it's there's a bunch of rules to this, but the key, and we're going to go run to the break and come back and talk more about this, but when you go buy the license, it's so important for our state. Like Chris just said, if you want to have public lands, even if you're not a hunter, you want to have public lands. If you're a hunter, you have no excuse. This is when you buy that, and you need to make sure everybody knows this is how the formula works. Oil and gas fund, of course, oil and gas funds the money that goes into the Forever Wild, but they're coming after that in Montgomery, too. I've talked about that in the past. We'll come back. We'll talk more about this when we return. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all here on this Saturday. Remember, you can check us out on facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Love to get your pictures up there. teal hunts, dove hunts, what you're doing around your place. Get ready for bow season coming up. You know, it's moving on.
Got your shorts on, I hope, for bow season.
That's right, your short pants, right? We'll see. I have a feeling here by get on into October, things will turn around. We have a little cool front coming next week, so those things could be good. Right now, we are talking about public lands, National Public Lands Day, and public lands right here in the state of Alabama, and what's being done. A lot of public lands were lost here, and up to 200,000 acres. We're talking with Chris Smith, Assistant Chief of Wildlife with Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. 200,000 some odd acres lost, but y'all have been rebuilding that through these SOAs and other opportunities.
Yes, sir, that is correct. We are certainly trying to do that.
And when we went to the break, I want to make sure, and then we'll get more into talk about public lands, but I just want to, the mechanism that these lands are purchased. So people have heard of Forever Wild. It comes up, in the legislature. They're trying to, not to get too much into my politics in my weekday show, but there's some people in Montgomery that would love to reroute the money from Forever Wild. But Forever Wild is the money chained through the Oil and Natural Gas Trust Fund that is buying this land, right? But to do this, we have to have the formula. You've got federal money from coming in through the excise tax, but we also have to, this all, I guess the equation here is we have to buy hunting licenses for all this to work.
That is correct. Yeah, hunting licenses. Sales is what drives our matching funds, like we talked about. And, this partnership between the Department of Conservation and Forever Wild Land Trust Board to purchase more land. I mean, Forever Wild can buy land and has for years without, providing match for federal grant programs. But that just gives us more bang for our buck, if you will. You use 25% of that acquisition purchase price is Forever Wild, and the rest of it, federal dollars, that just allows more Forever Wild money than to be available to buy other properties, whether it's more hunting land or additions to state parks or other recreation and nature preserve areas.
So how do we stack up Alabama with other states as far as public lands? Are we about average or up or down from, say, Mississippi, Kansas, or wherever?
Well, I think down in the southeast, we are toward the bottom. I cannot remember exactly if we are at the exact bottom. I do remember years ago when the Forever Wild Land Trust program was up for reauthorization, I remember seeing figures that we had about 4% public land in Alabama, and our surrounding states had 5, 6, 7, 8, that kind of percentage of public land within their states. A lot of the other states, like you're talking about Kansas and Nebraska and some of the Midwestern states, they've got some really interesting programs where they have a lot of walk-in areas where they have private landowners that open up their property to public opportunity. Then, of course, some of the other Colorado and some of the Rocky Mountain states have just acres, hundreds of thousands of acres of federal land that are open to the public.
Right.
But in the southeast, we are, like I said, I can't remember if we're exactly at the bottom, but we are. We're lower than most of the states in the southeast as far as percentage of available public land.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but I remember back when you were talking, I think we were at the bottom back then for public land. And then since then, have lost acreage.
Yeah, 100,000 acres, that's a bunch.
And Chris, you had talked about kind of, you're right. I mean, it would be very tough for the state or anybody to go find a 20,000 acre block, to buy anymore. It's just, if it hadn't been purchased or locked up, it's usually not available. So maybe the future of public lands is exactly what y'all are doing with SOAs, smaller properties, but maybe more of them.
That's correct. I think that's, and just like the area around the Cedar Creek Special Opportunity Area and the new Portland Landing. We recently just closed on another property that's adjacent to Portland Landing that'll be available in the mix of permits and hunting opportunities next year. And that tract is around 4,000 acres. And yes, it is very difficult to find a block of land that's 20,000, 25,000, or even 15,000 that is available, and that we can, even with, you know, this partnership we're talking about, Forever Wild and Pittman Robinson Funds, it's difficult to come up with, if that 15,000 acre tract appraised for $2,500 an acre, that's difficult to come up with that kind of money to take that down in one transaction.
That's for sure. If you're just joining us, talking with Chris Smith, Assistant Wildlife Chief, Alabama Department of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. And y'all's job, y'all have so many jobs, but one of them is being the manager of the state's wildlife, we the people's wildlife. And I got to think that you got to get pulled a lot of different ways. I mean, if I'm in your position, you got to produce a lot of, you want people to see a lot of critters. But at the same time, we want to see big critters. Let's think deer, right? People want to see a lot of deer, but people also want to see big bucks. I mean, how do y'all deal with that, whether you're managing big blocks, some of the legacy pieces, or these new SOAs? What are you doing?
Well, I guess one of the approaches that we've implemented in the last few years is some of the wildlife management areas have been broken up into a Zone A or Zone B. And, you know, you might have one of those zones that has more hunter choice hunts and just different things like that. The other zone may have antler restrictions and less hunter choice hunts, and trying to achieve that goal that you just said, because there are so many different desires. You know, some folks want to go and they want to see a deer every time they go. Other folks are happy with having that opportunity in the back of their mind of seeing a really nice buck, and if they don't see a deer every time they go, they're okay with that. And trying to manage that desire is difficult, but those are some of the things we're doing, is trying to listen and then make adjustments, make different habitat management actions. I mean, that's a key thing, is, you know, introducing some timber actions or prescribed fire, and just try to do different things to the habitat to make it as best, the best that it can be for brood, for turkeys or deer or anything like that.
You know, we think about this as the conversation's always, we're losing hunters. You know, we're losing hunters each year. We're losing a generation is coming up, and not, although there's some days at the boat ramp to go duck hunting here on the causeway, you could argue things have not gone that way. But no, nationally, fewer hunters. And this is the key. If somebody does not have a place to go hunting, number one, I know, and I want to get into the mentorship that y'all do as well. You got to have a mentor, and then you have to have a place to go. And you have to have a place to go that is not, you know, while I like the idea of traveling long distances and camping and hunting and doing all the, people just getting into it, they just need a place to go, right? I mean, if we don't have a place for, how can we complain we're not selling licenses? And if we don't sell licenses, we can't buy more land.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. And that's one of our goals, is trying to provide that place to go and try to, we really care about, and we work hard at trying to provide that quality experience in all those different aspects, whether it's numbers of wildlife or quality of the deer you see. I mean, that's we think about all that stuff all the time.
You know, a lot of people are not in hunting clubs, you know, that would like to go hunting, and Alabama just don't have a lot of places. Now, I've known quite a few people that's hunting here in the Delta, that before we had the Delta down here to hunt for public hunting, they weren't hunting at all. They didn't have any place to go. So now they're starting to hunt the Delta and really loving hunting the Delta down here and taking their kids and their grandkids and stuff hunting. That they wouldn't have an opportunity to do that because they don't have the money to get in a $3,000, $5,000 hunting camp.
You know, and another interesting thing or thought, I guess, a lot of people have about hunting public land is they feel like it's just overrun with people and gets, you know, a lot of pressure. And, you know, if you really think about it, sometimes, you know, I can remember hunting clubs that I've been in where, you know, we had 1,500 acres and we had 15 members. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on a Saturday and Sunday, you might have 10 members that were on that 1,500 acres, and folks are riding to and from their stands and just checking out and, you know, enjoying themselves doing what they're doing. But, you know, you go to one of these wildlife management areas that have, you know, 30,000 acres, and there's a lot of times you can find areas that you have by yourself. And
big areas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly right. big areas, and that's that is one misconception I think that a lot of people just maybe are afraid to check out. And that's another neat aspect of these special opportunity areas is there's a lot of folks out there that, you know, might be intimidated by, you know, picking up a WMA map or printing one off our website and, you know, heading out to Chocolaca WMA and saying, where do I start? Mm-hmm. You know, how do I approach this? And with these special opportunity areas, you know, you've got 300 acres, 350 acres, and you know, of course, we're there, you know, to answer questions and help in any way. And you can kind of put a game plan together and not feel as overwhelmed as, you know, where do I begin on when I drive down this road in Chocolaca WMA and I see nothing but trees and roads and I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah,
but,
you break it down.
One of the neat things about the special opportunity areas.
Bite-sized pieces. Yeah. That's what I like. Quickly, a couple of things I want to ask you. Number one, just on the mechanics of these SOAs and these quality hunting areas that we now have a chance to hunt, how are you managing harvest? Because, you know, I'm thinking about these places in big buck territory, but to continue to have big bucks and good hunts, you gotta reduce some doe population too.
That is correct. And we, you know, last year when the program began, you know, each permit holder could get one buck that met the antler restrictions and two does. This year we increased it to where you could get one buck that met the antler restrictions and three does. And after last year's season, you know, we met and talked about different things we could do to improve the program and talked about those concerns with harvesting does. Because a lot of folks, when they go to hunt one of these special opportunity areas, you know, they're hoping to get that buck that meets those antler restrictions, and they might let some does walk by thinking they can, they don't want to maybe mess up their afternoon hunt. And so,
I'd be one of those people. I'd be guilty of that, probably. Yeah. I'd be guilty party.
Yes. And one thing that we talked about after last year was over was this, we didn't implement it this year, but we'll probably implement it in the 2019-2020 season, is having some doe-only harvest special opportunity hunts. And one of the things we've talked about to maybe make that a little bit more attractive is have maybe a couple of those hunts before the regular gun season starts and just only allow the harvest of antlerless deer.
Let somebody get a start on season, get some meat in the freezer, you know, before they even get started with I like that.
Yeah, which is good. That way you're not worried about a buck or anything.
Right.
You're just strictly going to shoot a doe, and yeah, that's great.
Yeah, maybe somebody could, you know, a permit holder could go and fill their freezer up full of does, and then when gun season comes in, their focus then can be on waiting on that big mature buck they've been hoping to get.
That's right.
I love that plan. All right, we're going to run out of time here, but I do want to give you a chance to let people know, and on this Public Lands Day, if they're going to go to one place on the web to find out more about our public lands, Chris, where is that?
Go visit OutdoorAlabama.com, and up at the very top of that webpage, there's a link, hunting. If you put your cursor over that, you'll see a drop-down menu that'll come down, and there's all kinds of different links in that drop-down menu: wildlife management areas, special opportunity areas, adult mentored hunt program. The WMA page is a great place to go and get all the maps, the permit maps, learn all the seasons for all the different WMAs, and that is a great source. Another really great source to use to figure out WMAs near you is the interactive map, which if you go to that same OutdoorAlabama.com page, go into the lands link at the top, and that drop down, there'll be a link that says interactive map. If you click on that, there's a map that comes up, and you can see all the different SOAs, WMAs, state parks, all of the Conservation Department land, and you can filter that over on the left to only focus on what you're interested in. And then you can zoom in, and that's an aerial map, or you can, you know, go ahead and do some scouting right there from the website if you wanted to.
There we go. And I'm going to do just that. I think a lot of people will. Christmas, thank you. Thanks for being on today. We'll have to get you back on the show soon.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Always. Chris Smith, Assistant Chief of Wildlife, checking in on this National Public Lands Day and talking some state public lands. and the neat things that are going on now in Alabama.
You going to an SOA this weekend?
Yeah, well, I'm going to go look around. It's actually the 29th because my buddy has been drawn for the hunt at Portland Landing, and he said I get to go with him. So on the 29th is Scout Day. Yeah. We're coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, wrapping it up now for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Speaking of those SOAs and those public lands, I'm going to get a chance before next week to go take a tour through Portland Landing. So I'll give you a little report there from that SOA. Y'all check them out online. State's doing some really good things. And, you know, part of that goes back to the discussions we've had about reporting your harvest, whether you're on public land or on your private land.
Right.
We've got a we have a new era of folks in there. And I mean, if you have any doubt, I see people on Facebook sometimes questioning, they're trying to keep me from hunting. Y'all, Chuck Sykes is the head of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. Chuck Sykes, as in the management advantage,
right,
as in
that loves it.
That is a hunting and fishing machine, but a hunting and land management machine.
That's right.
Okay.
He's like me and Sean.
Yes, he is. We are all cut from the same cloth.
Yep.
He's not trying to get in the way of you hunting. I mean, Keith Galdon there is a hunting machine. Everybody that's with Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, I know these guys. Mike knows these guys.
Yep.
There is big a hunt. Right. What they're trying to do, exactly. They're trying to give us more opportunities, more days. Hey, the reason that we now can end February 10th in zone B or zone A, whatever, or zone B. The reason we can do that is because of the research. So when you harvest, you need to use the app. You need to put in your harvest. They're on our side. They're doing good things, and I hope they just keep it up. All right, so got to get out of here. Prep Sports Report on the way next. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye.